My name is Ann, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic.
Amen.
I'm from Cartersville, Georgia, closed discussion group. I brought my people with me just in case I didn't recognize enough people out there, because it's been about 10 years since I've been at this group. So thank you for showing up tonight. And I thank all the people that show up for the meetings, because, you know, we don't do this thing by ourselves. We have to do it with people. It's a we program. It's God, our sponsor, the people in the rooms, and it's not all alone. I related to what Damon said. I don't know if I could follow up. He would wax poetic at meetings, and I'd be over there, what did he say, and writing it down crazy like that. But anyway, I was going to the Sir Club in about 2005, and then I became a mail order bride, and I met my husband who lives in Cartersville, and so shipped out to Cartersville in about 2012. And so anyway, but I got to know a lot of people, and while I was here, it was the Breakfast Club was my home group, and I loved coming here. I lived only a couple of blocks away, so I had a lot of really good friends here, and I had a sponsor who was here. So anyway, this is my story. I wrote it all out, and then I looked at it, and then I said, I'll never remember that, and I don't like reading stuff, so I'm just going to have to just go by memory. But it was my life, so I shouldn't have too hard of a job, right? I was there. Well, mostly there. Anyway, I guess my story starts. My mom and dad had me in near Las Vegas, Nevada. That's where I was born. My dad was there as a contract plumber, a commercial plumber. He was helping to build the original plumbing in the strip, the original strip of Las Vegas. And he was with my mom, and they had just gotten married, and then I was born, and then my brother was born there, and they had another child from another marriage of my mother's. But this isn't her story, so I'll just stick with mine. And I'm one of seven kids. One of them is with the same dad. My mom loved, she believed in marriage. She was married numerous times, so she had five different marriages for those seven kids. So, because back in the day, having a baby daddy was not popular at all. So she married each and every one of them. So anyway, and so I was born out there. Their marriage was an alcoholic marriage. They were both alcoholic. And she did not stay sober. They got sober for a little minute. I think it had probably something to do with, you know, the violence and stuff that happened and the nudge from the judge. But anyway, they were sober for a little while. They had a clubhouse that they went to. But he went back out, and the marriage went downhill. And soon my mom was out on her own, and a single mom, and looking for the next daddy for the children. So anyway, that was my childhood. We kind of lived like vagabonds, really. We traveled a lot. She took the geographic to an art form, and I went to about 28 schools from kindergarten to eighth grade. And I had two stepdads and numerous uncles that, you know, they were just for like a minute here and there. But anyway, that was my childhood. I didn't have my dad with me. I always longed for my dad because he was the one that was missing, although the stories that I heard, I wasn't missing very much. But, you know, the father that's missing is always the one that gets glamorized, you know. And, you know, when I was feeling like I was less than, it was because my daddy wasn't there, you know. And so I was the oldest one that was at home. She had seven kids in a span of 24 years. So the oldest one was already married and had her own family. There were two children that were lost in a battle, a custody battle. And so then she had me and my brother and another sister from another marriage that was a hot minute, and then my youngest sister. So there was four of us that were at home. So I was the oldest at home. And so I had to kind of take care of the kids and everything like that when they would party and everything. So, you know, that was basically my life, you know. She was divorced just before I was ready to start high school. And she was also getting sick, and we didn't know exactly why she was getting sick, but she was pretty ill. And it turns out that she had cancer, and she wouldn't treat it. Her dad was a doctor, and she just thought, well, I'm not going to go to the doctors because all they don't want to do is just, you know, cut my breast off, and I'm not going to go. And so she died, you know, about 5 years after she, you know, found out that that's what she had. But those were some of the bad decisions that she made while she was in her disease. And so, you know, why watch that? And, you know, Mom passed away when I was 18. And I watched that and I thought, you know, I don't want to ever drink. I mean, this looks bad. You know, this looks really, really bad. But I was also seeing her at the very end of her alcoholism. And I thought, well, I'm never going to do what she did, and I'm going to do it smarter, and I'm going to do my life. And I was running on total self-will. And that's how I started my life. So to break out of that home life that was not good, I got married. And I was 17 when I got married, and he was a Vietnam vet. Well, he was in Vietnam at the time, actually. And then when he came over to the stateside, we met and we got engaged, and then he got stationed in Germany and came back about 9 months later, and we had a child. And, you know, I thought life was going to be good because, you know, I was in control. I was making my own decisions. I mean, like any 17-year-old can really make all these big decisions like I was making. I'd never seen a family that was intact. I'd never seen what it was like to have a man or woman that had a healthy relationship. So I had no idea. And we didn't have the internet back in my day because that was like the dinosaur days. And so we had magazines. And so I read these true romance magazines. And so I thought that's what marriage was supposed to be like because I didn't know anything. And when it wasn't that way, I was very disappointed. You know, when it wasn't that way, I was just thinking, well, maybe I didn't marry the right person. You know, maybe I did it wrong. You know, so anyway, that marriage, I had the child, but it ended after about 3 years, and she was a year and a half old. And I just thought, well, I didn't do a very good job, you know, of finding the right person. I should have found the soulmate, you know, and that was back like in the 70s where people were very ethereal about all this stuff. If you had your soulmate, then it was all going to work out fine. So anyway, my first dealings with alcohol were when, after I'd gotten married and he went back overseas, I was living in a residential club, and it was for singles, but because he was not with me, it was an inexpensive place for me to kind of park until he got back from overseas. In the meantime, they had this little private club in this building where all the folks would gather on a Friday night, and they had alcohol there. And I just thought this was the best thing, you know. And once I got turned on to how I felt when I drank alcohol, I thought, well, this isn't half bad. I mean, I won't do it real messy like my mom did, but this isn't bad at all. As a matter of fact, I was very scared. I'd had no confidence. I really was afraid of everybody. I had to put on a big show. But when I was drinking alcohol, I didn't have any of that going on. I mean, I was bold. I was out there dancing. I was having a good time, you know. And so alcohol, as I've heard from a lot of people, gave me that false bravado and confidence that I just didn't have. And that I felt like I was really a big fraud. But when I was drinking alcohol, I didn't feel any of that stuff. I felt, you know. So I had a pretty good time with doing that, you know, and sometimes I would be out late, and sometimes I would come back and have 1 hour to sleep before I had to go to work the next day, but that was okay, you know. I mean, I was invincible. I was 18 years old, and so it was pretty good. Well, married life wasn't any kind of fun. You know, I had a baby. I stayed at home. I didn't have really very many friends. And it was really a drag. He would come home. He was used to drinking. And he would drink beers. And he would, well, I used to think he would just go to sleep. But later I found out he'd just pass out. But anyway, that's the guy that I married, you know. And I thought, well, this is terrible. So then I would sit there and drink by myself, you know. So there we are, that lonely place, drinking by myself. And then after a while, with the alcohol and the unrealistic life that we had that really wasn't happening for either one of us, you know, eventually wound up splitting up, and I had a divorce by the time I was 21. Had a baby, year and a half old. So I signed up and went to trade school and started to learn a trade because I was going to have to support this baby. So I did that, and I worked at night, and it was really hard, and 70 hours a week, school and work, and a baby. So, of course, I had to drink to kind of take the edge off because I never had any time to have real fun. So alcohol was my fun replacement. I had it for my confidence replacement, my fun replacement, and whatever. So it just filled in the gaps. It wasn't my problem. It was just the answer to a lot of my other problems. That's all. It became that. And so I got through beauty college. It was hard. It was really hard because I thought I could do everything. I had this, the alcoholic thinking for me is that it's limitless. Everything's limitless. I can party all day, party all night, work all day, do this, do that. You know, there was no end to anything. So, of course I can do this. Well, it resulted in like two near nervous breakdowns. Only I wasn't rich, so I couldn't go to a sanitarium and really enjoy myself and get mud facials. I had to actually just kind of sleep it off for a few days and take a little time off of school and then go back at it, you know. And so that's what I did. I got through it, and then I went to Hawaii to kind of celebrate and just went there on my own, stayed for a week, came back. Oh, my gosh, it was wonderful. It was the first vacation I'd ever had in my life. In my life, our family didn't vacation. We just moved, you know. We just moved. We changed scenery altogether. So anyway, that was kind of fun. And I met people over there, and gee, it seemed so glamorous over there. And when I was on vacation, there was a lot of fun people, and I had fun and party and all this kind of stuff. And when I came back, I decided, well, that's it. I'm just going to move to Hawaii. I'm going to change my life again. So I had learned that geographic thing from my mom, you know, just change the scenery, change where you live, change it all up, and then you don't have to stick around and deal with the problems. Okay, so I didn't realize that I was kind of running away, but I think I probably was. So I moved to Hawaii and started working over there and became pretty successful over there. And my daughter stayed with her dad in California, and we kind of brought her back and forth and so forth. And, you know, had a pretty good life over there. But, you know, as I got more successful, I could actually afford just fancier parties, really, and nicer restaurants and stuff like that. But the scene was all the same, you know. It led to just a lot of just burning me out. And the biggest problem that I think I probably had was that empty space inside that a lot of people talk about, that big hole that's just so big you can't fill it up, and you can't, there's not enough work. I used to be real good about setting goals, and I would attain the goals, and then I'd feel empty, and then I'd get a new car, and then that afternoon I'd be lonely and feel really empty, and then I would say, okay, well, it's just time to make some more goals. So it was kind of like I was always having a run after something. I was trying to push after something all the time. And, you know, it was a very empty life, but I didn't know any other kind of a life. So I worked a lot. You know, I guess you could say that I was kind of a workaholic, whatever. So I didn't get a chance to really, put the time into drinking that it probably deserved, but probably saved my kidney or my liver a little bit. But anyway, so that was my life. And, you know, after a while, after about 12 years, I decided it was time for me to get married. And so the guy that I happened to be dating at the time, he must be the one because I'm dating him right now. So you know, that's the guy. Besides that, I think I'm in love with him because I've never felt this way with anybody before. He was like an emotional roller coaster that went like this, right? Up and down and up and down. And I'd never experienced anything like that, you know. So I said, this must be love, because I don't know what love is, right? So this must be love. So anyway, I get with him, and, you know, after a while, we decide to get married, and I'm going to have kids, and we're planning to do a life together and everything like that. Turns out, that excitement was the fact that he was alcoholic, drugs, and his whole family was that way, and they were a fun bunch, too. But the thing is that wasn't excitement. That was just all that dysfunctional family of mine coming back. And it was familiar, and that's what I could relate to, you know. So anyway, we try to set up house. We set a lot of goals. We were good at setting goals together, and we did that. We got a business. We were doing really good. Have, you know, the 2.5 kids, you know. We're living in the suburbs, buying a condo, doing it. We're just doing it, right? So, but it starts to come unraveled when he starts doing the white stuff up the nose. And, I mean, the marriage burnt down fast. It really went down fast. Here, I was already feeling really that empty spot. I've got the kids. I've got all the goals that we set. And yet, I'm still not happy. I'm not happy. I know I'm not happy. And nothing could fill that up. You know, so I'm probably, well, I don't want to drink all the time. I was drinking pretty regular, though, like, you know, wine in the evening and stuff like that. I had the two kids. He's partying. I'm stuck with the kids. What is about this is fun? This is not fun. So, you know, I just did a little bit of wine and a little bit of Pacalolo and, you know, that kind of stuff. Keep it on the cool side just so I can get these kids taken care of. And then after they went to bed, then I could probably have some. But, you know, this life was very empty, too. So, you know, what do you do when you've gotten everything that you've ever wanted and you're still miserable? And there's never enough. You can't ever have enough money or goals fulfilled or cars or condos or anything. You know, kids, even kids. Well, if we have some kids, you know, it's never enough. It's never, ever enough. And, you know, it's the same thing with the drinking. It's never enough, too, you know. So eventually, we wind up getting a divorce after about 5 years, and I'm single again, and now I've got these two kids, and then I have, oh, by the way, the kid that turned into a teenager in California got shipped over to me because, you know, Dad couldn't stand what he was watching with her and the stepmom, so I wind up with a teenager, an infant, a toddler, and a cocaine-addicted husband who's gone 6 days a week. And I'm going, I don't know what I ever did to have God be so mad at me. I mean, this was hell. So anyway, I did, you know, got the divorce. I must have picked the wrong guy. I must have picked the wrong guy again. Why did I pick the wrong guy again? So anyway, but because there were children involved, there was also questions asked, like, well, what seems to be the problem? Well, there's a lot of finger-pointing about the cocaine and about the drinking and all that. And the judge says, well, I don't know who's telling the truth, so I guess we're just going to have to get you guys get evaluated or something like that. So we just said, well, fine. So we go get evaluated. And it turns out that they thought, they had the audacity to think that both of us had alcohol problems. And I couldn't even believe that. That was crazy. And so I basically, because I wasn't drinking as much as he was, so I just said, well, I'm just codependent, and I had just found out about ACOA, which is Adult Children of Alcoholics. So I said, I'm that, and I'm going to those Al-Anon meetings. And so they said, okay, fine, as long as you go to something, because y'all are crazy. You know, they don't talk that way, but if they were in the South, they would have said that. Anyway, so I started going to the Al-Anon meetings, and now here I am, the two kids. I'm in my 30s now, my mid-30s, and I'm trying to raise them. Dad has them every other weekend. So on the off weekends, I get to party while they're gone, right? And I did, too. So between the ages of about 38 and 42, My bottom came up on me so fast, and I didn't even see it coming. I mean, you know, the thing that really surprises me is that they say with women it can come up pretty darn fast. And I don't know what that's all about. I think it's unfair. It's probably a hormone thing. But it happened. And what I also had was I had enough knowledge about alcoholism through the Al-Anon meetings and friends in the AA program that I'd made to kind of get scared about the alcohol. So this was real hell. I'm watching myself. Well, how much did you drink this week? Well, you know, I didn't drink that much. Well, all right, well, and then I have a girlfriend, and she was my best girlfriend, and I couldn't be her friend anymore because she was just too out of control. I would always be with people that drank way more than me, so I didn't look so bad. And so I said, I can't be your friend anymore because your drinking is just too out of control, and I don't want to take the rap for you with your husband and explain to him, the police officer, you know, why you didn't come home at a certain time. And, you know, she was trying to use me for the alibi all the time. So I just said, I'm not going to do it. And God, you know what? She went and got sober on me. And that, I never saw that one coming. But, you know, obviously her bottom came up too at that time. So she gets sober and she changed. She changed. We used to have big fights and hanging up on the phone. We would, you know that one where you're both yelling and screaming on the phone and then whoever hangs up first wins? Okay, we used to do that all the time. And so after she got sober, we weren't doing that anymore. Matter of fact, she was kind of laying low. She wasn't doing like all the stuff that she was doing. So I wasn't too sure about this, but she had about a year of sobriety. And I'm going, I can't believe this. What in the world are you doing, you know? So then the next thing you know, she's got my ear and she's talking to me about, well, if you think you might be drinking too much, then she starts giving me this big book stuff. And she's telling me, why don't you just stop drinking for like, oh, a month? And so I would challenge myself to stop drinking for a month because I'm a goal-oriented person. So that sounded like a challenge to me. So I'd try it. I never got past about a week or so, but that was good enough for me. And, you know, for the longest time, she would seed these things about AA and about alcoholism. I knew that I had both parents alcoholic. Chances were pretty high that I might be alcoholic too, but I didn't see myself as an alcoholic at all because I didn't drink like she drank. I mean, she had bottles stuffed under the bed and all. She brought a baby bottle filled with vodka over my house one time because she could ride it in the car and then not get caught with, you know, alcohol in the car. And she couldn't do that because it would look bad, you know, on her husband who was the cop. And she'd get he'd get in trouble, and then she'd be in big trouble. And he told her he'd leave her ass in jail if she ever got caught. So, you know, she had to figure out stuff. So she was pretty sneaky and crafty. But you know, she goes and gets sober, and then she did something that was astonishing to me. She actually apologized for something. And I dropped in my tracks just about. I thought, she's never apologized for anything. What in the world is going on? And I guess we came back together because I was still pretty ticked, you know, for a lot of reasons. But her mom died, and I showed up at the funeral, and I gave, you know, I knew her mom, and, you know, I was friends with the family. And so I spoke on behalf and so forth. And she thanked me for that, and, you know, we just started getting close again as a friend. She was a different person. You know, she wasn't the person that I knew before that was always up to something and being sneaky and, you know, trying to figure out stuff. And, you know, so, you know, I kind of liked this new one, except she was a pain. She kept inviting me to the meeting. She says, we got a seat for you. And I'm going, yeah, you're just so codependent. You can't go by yourself. You know, so anyway, because I was an Al-Anon person. You know, I had my black belt in Al-Anon. And so, you know, I knew all about it. Now, let's clear that up, too. I didn't work the steps in Al-Anon. I was a poser. Pretty much. I just went to the meetings because they made me feel good. I could blow off steam and then go home because I felt better and then I wasn't so angry with my kids. But that was about the extent of it. And I'm saying this to say that if you don't do the steps, you're not going to grow. If you don't do the steps with another person, you won't get past doing the action steps. You know, I just did like 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. That was it. Because I'm not doing 4. I'm not going near 4. Are you kidding me? Nobody's going to want to do that. So anyway, that's what kind of an Al-Anon person I was. I was, you know, I just felt good. And I did that for years. I was able to, you know, fake other people out and even convince myself that I was, you know, doing good. But the only problem with it is that parts of the big book kind of fall into you when you're around those people, especially going to speaker meetings and gatherings, roundups. They have big roundups over in Honolulu. And I went to an international convention, and they had a lot of people in there. And, you know, it was a lot of fun meeting all those people. I went to a camp out, and my sponsor, my Al-Anon sponsor, was also an AA. She was what they call a double winner. Well, I was pretty much, I had people on both sides. I have a girlfriend here telling me, and I've got my sponsor here who's really basically just giving me all the rope that I needed. She finally got me to do the steps in Al-Anon, and she got me to be honest and do a fourth step. And on the bottom of my fourth step, I actually wrote down that I thought I was alcoholic and that a lot of my problems that I had in life probably had something to do with alcohol, might, kind of, sort of. But it was enough to really open that door to maybe. And on Christmas Day of 1994, I found myself trying to sober up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And that morning, we went to church. I went to my girlfriend's house to a Christmas brunch, and a Christmas brunch that served champagne cocktails, and you couldn't get in the door unless you brought at least 2 bottles of champagne. Well, some people even brought more. But anyway, I took my kids to it, of course, because I was a good mother. And so they're playing in the other room while we're all having champagne cocktails all day long. And so a few hours of that, and I was driving back, you know, to my house, and then watching myself as I was starting to sober up, trying to sober myself up to go drive to the other side of the island to see my grown daughter and my grandchild. And when I was doing that, I realized that was my moment, you know, that I realized, you're doing what you said you would never do, which is drive with your kids in the car when you're drinking, when you're under the influence, when you're actually drunk. And if you're drunk enough to be getting sobering yourself up with coffee at 3 o'clock in the afternoon just so that you can carry on driving to the other side of the island, you're crossing some lines that you never crossed before. And I hadn't. I never drove with my kids in the car. And my mom did that. And that was one of the things that I thought, I'll never do that. I'll never do this. I'll never do it. A lot of those other things I forgot, but this one I didn't forget. And that made me really start to think about, you know, what in the world was I doing with my life. That's Christmas Day. New Year's Eve, well, a week went by and I forgot all about that. Bought some champagne for New Year's Eve. After all, it's New Year's Eve. And was supposed to have somebody to come over and share it with on New Year's Eve. And he was a sometimes boyfriend that was a definite alcoholic. And of course he didn't show up. And that kind of bummed me out. So I only drank half the bottle and then put the rest in the fridge and went to bed. And I got up the next day and I said, that's it. I can't do this. I can't pretend anymore, you know. And I dumped out the rest of it and I went to a meeting 2 days later, an AA meeting. And I wasn't sure that I was alcoholic, but I could tell that I was definitely having problems with the alcohol. And I'm so grateful for that tradition that says the only requirement for membership is that you have a problem with drinking, that you want to stop drinking. That's what it says. And I had my girlfriend, my same pain in the butt girlfriend, she would tell me that all the time. If you desire to stop drinking and you can't, then come to the meetings. That's it. And so I started going to the meetings and I said, okay, I'm going to give this thing for a while, okay? But now my life had already started burning to the ground. And that was when I started doing the steps. I mean, by that time, I had lost my business, and without my business income, I couldn't afford the nice condo in Hawaii Kai with the pool, and so I had to move into a terrible place that my church was subsidizing because I didn't have any income without the business, and lost the flashy new car. It was leased, so I just gave it back to them because I knew they were going to come and get it eventually anyway. And I was in this cracked neighborhood with my two kids in a one-bedroom house that was so old that when I tried to hook up a washer on the back porch, I blew all the fuses. It was from like 1930 or something. I thought the place was going to burn down. So, I mean, this place was old. But anyway, I have to be grateful for that place, though, because that was when my bottom had come up. And I was grateful for the people that had seeded the seeds of AA way ahead of time. So when you're talking to your friends and you're just sharing your story, just share your story just exactly as it's happening for you. And you know, if they see themselves in it, they'll eventually come around and they'll be grateful for it. Because I can't say that that hurt me at all. It really helped me. I probably could have gone on crazy like that for the longest time. You know, during that time, and I'm gonna fast forward a lot of years already, but it was in Honolulu, and within the year that I got sober, I was able to move back into a nice neighborhood. I was sharing a house with some other women that, you know, were being subsidized by the church, and I got back up on my feet. I started making some money again, and I was able to make a living for my kids and myself. But that first year was a tough year. It was not an easy year because, you know, that humbling that happens, you know, when you realize that there is a God, but you ain't it. And it used to be alcohol, but it's not working for you anymore. And that the cost of it was way too high to have to pay for how little I was getting out of it. And that's when it was time. You know, it was just plain time. And knowing that my mom went insane and died at the age of 52, that was not by itself enough to keep me from drinking and even developing alcoholically. I heard somebody say, and I'm just paraphrasing this, I don't know if I got this right or not, that alcoholism is like the handcuffs that are so loose you don't know they're on you, but they're tight enough that you can't get out of it, at least not by yourself. And so it does take whatever it takes for you to first of all be aware that you are where you are. And then you can get help. And then finding out that I couldn't do it by myself. You know, I by myself would set goals about not drinking, but I couldn't stop by myself. So that was the time when I had to stop. That was my getting off point, you know. If you'd asked me if I knew God before I got into the rooms, I would have told you, of course I do. I was going to the church every week. I was involved in service programs. I'd open up the church. You know, I did this 12-week service program, not once, but twice. And, you know, I was singing in the choir and all that stuff. You know, all that stuff was just to look good stuff. Fancy up the outside because I knew on the inside I was a mess. And the more of a mess I was on the outside, the more I tried to make it look good on, you know what I'm saying. I'm getting a little mixed up, but you know what I'm talking about. Getting to the place where my outside does definitely not match the insides. My insides were a mess, you know. I didn't know God at all. So then here's my sober friend telling me, you know, there's a difference between spirituality and religion. And that was a big talk that we had to have a few times because I didn't get it, because I didn't have spirituality, really. I had religion, and I thought that those two were synonymous, and they weren't, you know, because I went in there as an imposter. I'd be standing up in the choir just singing and wobbling my little voice out, and yet I was still reeking from alcohol from the night before. So, you know, this picture wasn't matching up at all. So getting this part where getting a conscious contact with a God that I understood, I didn't understand the God, because as much moving as my mom did and our family did, that's about how many different churches we went to too, because We'd been to a lot of churches. My mom was picking churches by the ones that would pick us up and drop us off, and we would rate them by how good their snacks were. So, like, that was our religion. And she wouldn't go half the time because that was her time to have some kid-free time. You know, she was having a little break time. So that was what I knew about religion. And when I was 8, she got into Catholicism, and that was a scary time because they had a lot of rules, lots of rules, and they really dished out the guilt pretty good if you didn't follow them all. At least that's what I remember. As a matter of fact, that was the reason why I got married, because good girls, good Catholic girls, never had sex until after they got married. And so when my hormones hit, I realized I wasn't going to be a nun. So I was going to have to get married. So that's how, partially how I made that choice. And so I just picked the most likely candidate, you know, that looked like he could probably be good husband material. And that was it. So, you know, so for me, that was what was going on. By the time I got sober, I'd already been married and divorced 3 times, right? And so that was wearing out, because I was finding out that just changing partners wasn't it, changing locations wasn't it, changing jobs wasn't it. I mean, it's all just running away from myself. So when I did the 4th step, I realized why I was doing so much running away. And I realized I don't have to do that anymore. And now I can really start making choices that are just the right choices. But I had to get clear on this God thing. And it's real important to spend some time on too. You know, a good sponsor is going to let you spend some time to get comfortable with the God of your understanding. I mean, it doesn't have to be the God of her understanding or yours or yours or yours. The one that works for you. That's what it has to be. But you got to have one. You got to. Because if you don't have one, you don't have any power to get through the action steps of 4 through 9. You know, only God can help me to change what's going on inside of me. Only God can heal me. Only God can get me to a place where I can forgive others and forgive myself for all the stuff that I did wrong. You know, because otherwise that guilt was following me around. Well, you double that up with being raised Catholic, and that'll help too. You know, I was a guilty sinner no matter what I did with that one. So I chose no religion after that, you know, no religion, or at least not the ones that are going to dish out all that stuff. But I feel that was just part of my rebellion. I felt like God was to blame. He was on my 4th step. He was to blame for me getting married to the wrong guy when I was 17. Can you imagine that? He did that. That's how messed up my thinking was. I mean, that's just the way it was. I had a lot of erroneous thinking. I had a God, she had me to describe the God, and I had a God of like when I was 3 years old, and I had another one at about 5 years old, and I had another one at about 7 years. I mean, what I had was a lot of concepts, but I didn't really have a God of my understanding. I didn't understand all of that, so I just chalked it all up that that's just a crazy religion stuff. But I actually got a relationship with a God of my understanding, and one that I would trust enough to be able to rely on him to help me through all the tough stuff. And that's why it's important to really do that 2nd step and do it thoroughly before you get on to the rest of them. And thoroughly may take a few minutes, it might take a few hours, days, weeks, or whatever, but do it thoroughly. You know, get comfortable with that God, because that's the God that it says in the big book that's going to be standing sometime between you and that drink. And you better trust that God, because you're trusting him with your life. And so get comfortable with that God. Be able to talk to that God anytime. Pray. You know, meditate on that God. Whatever that is, you need that power to get through these things. So I'm just going to say that because that was my personal experience. Then the other thing that I'm going to say is I didn't like having a sponsor because she was always suggesting things to me that I didn't want to do. First of all, I didn't want to hear any critique because I'm sensitive and I might get my feelings hurt. And what do you mean I'm not doing things the right way? I'm tired of people telling me I'm not doing it the right way and all of that, you know. So I had to kind of humble myself down a little bit here and just say, okay. She says, just trust the process. Trust the process. You've heard that, right? Trust the process. The process really does work. So as I was starting to understand my God, my understanding, and trust the process and take some suggestions, lo and behold, the obsession to drink left me. I did way more obsessing than I did drinking, I'll tell you that. And that's part of being an alcoholic too. No matter how much drinking I did, I was always thinking about the next time I was going to drink, when was the last time that I drank, how much do I have in the house, what do I need to get in the fridge, how much do I have in that fridge? Okay, so, you know, that obsessing, that is the alcoholic mind. So, you know, it took me a while to really, really feel comfortable with saying that I'm an alcoholic, because I didn't really think it. I just thought, well, I'm in here because I want to stop drinking and I can't do it by myself. So I'm going to stay in here and I'm going to give this thing about a year. And if I'm not convinced in a year that all my problems, you know, like losing my place to live, losing my stuff, losing my business, losing three husbands, and all of that stuff, and wasn't alcoholism, that was just a series of unfortunate events or something. But if that wasn't it, then I was going to chuck this thing and just go on back to drinking. So I was going to give it at least a year because I thought that would be fair. All right, so at my 89th day of my 90-90, my 89th meeting, a gal gets up and she starts talking about the way that I drank. And she said that she didn't drink a lot. She mostly drank on the weekends, whatever. But when she did drink, her life just came unglued, you know. And when she wasn't drinking, she was thinking about drinking and all that kind of stuff. And I was just sitting there and I was going, they got these kind of alcoholics? Wow, this is I can relate to this woman, right? And that was the day that I could actually say, I am an alcoholic. I get it now. I don't have to relate to the way that you drank or what happened to you or a pint a day or a quart a day or a gallon a day or whatever, all kinds of crazy stuff I thought I was hearing. But the fact that this mind, the alcoholic mind, the way it works, I related to that right away. How you guys felt about things, I related to that right away. And so that was enough to keep me at least hanging in there for those 90 and 90. And I highly recommend that if anybody can do that, simply because, you know, you have to do something for a while before it becomes comfortable, you know. And meetings every day, it was telling me I need to attend to my program every day. I have to do something for my program of recovery every day. And because I was running crazy for 42 years, and I wasn't going to have to I wasn't going to get to change that overnight. But at least I'd learned from taking that four-step in Al-Anon that I was going to have to be honest, and I was going to have to surrender some things, because by that time, I'd learned what surrender was all about. And by that time, I already had a higher power, and I was able to trust. And then there was another thing too, trusting a woman sponsor. I didn't trust women. I couldn't trust my mom. You know, she had betrayed me in a lot of levels, and I didn't trust women. I had women work for me. I had a business that catered to women, and had no women friends really. Oh, I had one friend, but she betrayed me, and so then I didn't have her anymore. And so, you know, I had one. When I got into the program and I had to work with a woman, I started to learn how to trust women and listen to them. And when I got within women's meetings, I got to make friends with other women and learn how to trust them. You know, trusting is not something that you can just do carte blanche. I learned that you have to, you know, give out trust a little at a time. You know, you can't just black and white, I either trust you or I don't trust you. If I trust you, I trust you 100%. Go ahead and take my car keys and, you know, do whatever you want to do. Or I don't trust you at all and you can't even walk me to the car. You know, I mean, it's not that way. So I learned that in the rooms. I learned that in the program with working with a sponsor. Then I learned how to act right. I didn't know how to act right. I never really, you know, I just had to wing it, you know. It's kind of like life was handed to me without an instruction manual. And all I saw was my crazy parents and how they did it. And all I could emulate was what they did. So that's what it is. So I actually had to start growing up at 42. Okay. In the first year of sobriety, I went back to school. I got my GED. Because even though I had my cosmetology license, I didn't have to have a high school education for that. All I had to do was take an equivalency test. And I'm a reader. I love reading. And I passed it with flying colors, and so I didn't have to do that. I went to school because I decided I was going to get that high school diploma. So I got it, that GED at 42. I got that, and that was a real big deal for me. It was a real big deal. I also went to prom that year, too. Imagine that. They had a radio show that was on, and it was prom season coming up, and they were saying, you know, sometimes people didn't have really good proms, and I'm thinking to myself, sometimes. I didn't even go to high school, so how can you go to prom? So anyway, they said, you know what? If some people would like to have a second chance at a prom, why don't they just send us, fax us in, this is back in the old days, fax us in, you know, some kind of story about why you didn't go to prom. So I faxed in my story, which of course would bring anybody to tears because it was, you know, I had my mom and she was dying of cancer and I had to take care of my younger sister and brother and blah, 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 blah. And it was like, oh my God. And so I was one of the first people that won the contest and, for the saddest story. And so anyway, they had this big prom for people that were like middle-aged people that just kind of didn't have a first prom. And so I made my prom dress and I got a date and I had drama with, first I got one date and then he turned out to be a jerk and I didn't like him anymore. So then I went back to my friend that I first asked and then he said yes because he was a friend and oh God, the drama. And I can see why the first prom was not very good for people because that was a lot of drama. But I had a good time. So you imagine I got my high school diploma and went to prom in my first year of sobriety. And I also had to do other things that I didn't know I could do without drinking. Because, you know, drinking was my false bravado, right? Like, I made a real complete ass of myself at karaoke with a girlfriend, well, the same girlfriend that got sober, on the Outer Islands. We went to the Outer Islands. We got up there and, you know, a couple of drinks in me and I'm sounding pretty good, you know, and then a couple more drinks in me and I'm not sounding so good, but I think I sound good. By the third drink, I thought I was Whitney Houston making a music video, and I was dancing and singing at the same time, everything, and the DJ, all he could say was, wow, that's a lot of energy. And so I was so, but we thought, well, we're in the Outer Islands. Nobody will recognize us or anything like that. We go into shopping the next day, hungover, dark glasses. We're looking around. And the girl behind the counter says, oh, aren't you the karaoke girls from last night? And we're going, oh, no, we're busted, you know. That was real embarrassing for me, you know, because I always tried to keep a good show. Only on the Outer Islands would I really, really, like, hang, you know, cut loose and really do some crazy stuff. On Oahu, I'd try to keep a good front because I was a business owner and I was dignified. And, of course, I wouldn't, you know, make a jerk out of myself. So, but when I went to Maui, forget about it, you know. And so I couldn't remember really crazy stuff when I was having a hard time recalling, you know, my alcoholic episodes and stuff like that. I couldn't really think of any. So at 5 months of sobriety, my sister came from visiting from Nevada with her husband and says, come on over, stay with us in Maui and stuff. So I went over to Maui. As I'm riding around in the car, I'm going, oh, yeah, I remember that. Oh, my God, that hotel. And, you know, I'm looking at it. Oh, wow, look at it. Oh, not that. Oh my God, that's, all of a sudden these memories were coming back of times that were just really awful. They were pretty sordid. And then the kicker part was this. She wants to go to a luau. and a commercial luau, and, you know, where they have unlimited Mai Tais and stuff. And I thought, you know, Joy, I don't think that's a good idea. You just go with Fred and have a good time. And I think I'll go check out a meeting. So I go find a clubhouse over there in Maui, in Lahaina. And I'm sitting in this meeting, and I look around, and, oh, my God, this place looks really familiar. This was one of the first, it used to be a friend. I said, this was a restaurant one time, right? And they said, yeah. I said, oh, my God, it was a French restaurant where I did another scene. Oh, my God. So, you know, it helped me in a way because, you know, the memories and whatever it takes to really convince you that you really, really have a problem, the unmanageability of this. It's sometimes hard to come with those memories when you start to write your four-step out. You've got to really bring all of this stuff up, but you can't remember all of it. So luckily with a good sponsor, they just say, look, just do what you can now. Anything comes up later, we'll deal with it later on. And that's how you grow. All right, so enough of that. And I'm running over time, and I'm really sorry for that. So I do want to finish up with this. The last 26 years has been amazing. Out of those years, there were a few years where I didn't go to meetings, didn't take care of my program very well. I didn't grow. I didn't get strong in my program. I didn't go drink. I was going to church and so forth, but I don't recommend that. I need church and I need my meetings. I need a sponsor and I need my friends at church. They serve two separate types of spirituality for me. Church doesn't deal with the issues that I as an alcoholic have to deal with. And so I need my meetings for that. And the meeting rooms are great, but they don't go into real specific religions. And so I need church to do that. So the two of them balance me out real well, you know, because the church is, you know, I bring the spirituality from these rooms into church. I bring a deeper understanding of the God of mine that I have. I bring that understanding and spiritual principles straight out of the big, big book. That's the Holy Bible, in case you didn't figure that out, that are in this program, that are their ancient spiritual wisdom, 2,000 years old, and they work. And so I appreciate both of them. And since I've been in the program, life didn't go perfect for me. I still got two more marriages and divorces because I didn't work the steps enough to know that I was the problem. But I started working with a sponsor and figured that one out and got married for the third time, and I'm still with him, and it's now on to 9 years. So the moral to that story is, don't procrastinate. Get with your sponsor. As long as you work with your sponsor and keep doing the deal that you did in the beginning when you were really, really desperate, that same impetus will keep you growing. And life gets better than you can even imagine. And my life has gotten better than anything I could have imagined. I would have never thought that I am where I am. I really can't. I have all three of my daughters, pretty good relationships with all three of them, 6 grandkids. My kids actually trust me with their children. That would not have happened if I was drinking. The wonderful man that I have right now, I wouldn't be with if I was drinking. And, you know, with that comes, you know, a beautiful community that I live in and have been involved in for the last 9 years. So that's where I'm at today, and I'm telling you, this thing does work if you work it, but you gotta work it. And I know it's corny, but you're worth it. So I'm gonna wrap it up right now. I didn't realize it was running so long, but anyway, God bless all of you here, and I'm so glad that you're here. And y'all need each other more than you know. So stick around and stick with the winners. Thank you.